I'm right back at it with my brother Jay Dutch. Fresh new trash for the family, what the fuck? My man Big Derek, but we call him old school. About to get up on the mic and straight up act straight up. Ain't no fiction here, cause we only talking facts. If he's talking about the bucks, he don't cut him no slack. No need to waste time, and let's get right to it. What the fuck, podcast ain't nothing to it but to do it. Yeah. About to turn it over to my man old school with the what the fuck podcast. Check it, yo. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck.
Well, we managed to screw this whole thing up for the first time with the recorded podcast intro. I'll get that cleaned up in post if you're in Mixlr right now. Thank you for joining us early. We are live at whatthebuck.net here in Studio 76. I am old school. You guys should be used to my voice. I am joined, as has become quite regular this season anyway, by the one, the only ginger badass, Mark Cook of pewterreport.com fame. Welcome, Mark.
Pretty much like the last three seasons.
No, you weren't here as much then. I want you to adjust your microphone, because I got so much complaints about last time you were here. You were slouched down. You had no energy. You don't know how to use a mic stand. You need to eat it. Pretend you like it. There we go. That's better. You're already better.
Yeah. Not a fan of having a big device like this close to my lips.
I know you're not used to big devices, Mark. Just get used to it. Welcome to the show. We are What the Buck. We're going to be doing an hour-ish of review of the just debacle.
I thought you said there's intro music.
There was intro, but you don't have it here because Mixlr doesn't let me feed it back into your headsets, and then it managed to repeat. I managed to dick the whole thing up. So I will fix it. I'll clean it up in post.
Will you just like do your live version of the intro music?
It's Franco. I can't. Come I don't on. Even have it memorized. No, I can't
oh,
do
boy.
It. I can't do it. I can't. I simply can't. But you'd like it. If you listened to last week's podcast, I put it in after in post, but you didn't go back and listen to it. So, at any rate, welcome to the show tonight,
you mean
guys.
The Scott Reynolds podcast.
Oh, now you're going to attack your man. Hey, listen, you better be careful. He pays your damn bills. I would not make fun of Scott.
We pay each other's bills.
All right, whatever. We will be talking about Arizona. We will be talking about the Rams, where we hope to rebound, obviously. We will be talking about the Rams that we hope to rebound, obviously, this week.
We hope to rebound.
I know. You don't like the personal pronouns. I don't care, man. If you want to do your podcast on pewterreport.com, you can drop the personal
I
pronouns.
I love antagonizing you. You're such a baby tonight.
It is just...
Super sensitive, Derek.
I am a little bit sensitive.
It's going to be a bad show.
It is going to be a bad show. So he started out trashing my man Rick's article about
terrible.
Fire Dirk Cutter.
Worst one first, ever.
First and foremost, I want to make sure that I point out that at least half of the feedback I got on the article via Twitter, et cetera, were clearly people who didn't read the article, because they were saying, you can't possibly believe,
right. No,
which is
I
what
saw
you
that
get.
Too.
I'm
yeah.
sure you get that same yes. crap. If you yes. use a leading title,
right.
people read the title and they think that's enough.
Of course.
And to Cheryl in the chat room, the reason it's unlisted is because I had to encode it myself because they both came together. So I've got to get that cleaned up. I don't have the actual ID3 tags for it. So I apologize.
Nerd talk.
That is by Franco, though. But at any rate, the other thing was, Rick writes articles, view from the stands. I appreciate that you don't like it, and you know Rick well enough. You can certainly have that debate with him.
Right. It was a well-written article.
Well, it usually is, right? But you may not have liked the content, which certainly happens, and is everyone's right to not like it. What I found interesting was leaving the stadium in Arizona, and there was a tremendous number. There were a tremendous number of fans for the Bucks there. It was great. It's probably, to be honest, other than Atlanta, which always gets a great crowd, probably the largest attendance I've ever seen in the away games that I go to. And, man, they were excited going in, and there was so much positive energy, and then you just get kicked in the jimmy and come out. There were definitely those rumblings. Now, like I said in Twitter, most of those guys were a little bit drunk.
Yeah.
But I fully expected to hear it more, and I'm sure it is being said around water coolers by, in my opinion, morons. It's knee-jerk moron reaction, which is exactly what Rick's conclusion was.
Right.
Stop it. This is silly.
But he's stopping something that really hasn't happened.
But... You know that it has happened. It just hasn't happened to you.
One or two people in the world.
I know. One or two people. Listen, as soon as it gets put on a real important website, I'm sure then people will talk about it more.
No, your website's great. I love your
content. No, I wasn't talking about... I was saying if a bigger website had mentioned... If PFW had dropped about it or whatever, anything...
I would have said the same thing. This is. I would have. In fact, I would have even been even more critical of it because they aren't in tune with the fans like you guys are, like we are. And I'm judging it from our message board full of,
right.
of at times,
no,
irrational people.
And all message boards. That's not unique to you. Message boards, Facebook, all these places are going to grab a wide swath of fans, right? And they're going to be emotional. They're going to be incredibly over. The word fan means fanatic, right? It comes from fanatic. They are fanatical.
I meant this thing that spins around and blows air.
Well, it sometimes does, but not when we're talking about like this. But you're right. You see, you're a journalist, so you know all of the fancy words. But yeah, in this case, it's fanatic. But Christopher Oxentine, even, and you know Chris, he's been in our chat room. You
Chris don't Rock?
Yeah, exactly. His brother.
I didn't know.
Just said this was a lovey-like loss, right? I don't actually think it was a lovey-like loss. I don't think it resembled much of a lovey-like loss, personally. Now, you may disagree. You put your finger up.
Well, yes and no. The final outcome was, the way that it happened, no. But this is what and I'm glad I didn't say it publicly, but I'm going to admit it now, so I might as well have. I was going to say, I didn't know how many games the Bucks were going to win this year, but I certainly didn't expect a lovey-like loss from a Dirk Cutter team, a Mike Smith-led team, and I was wrong. I was wrong.
So when we say lovey-like, what exactly do you mean? Just the score?
Yeah. Score-wise.
Okay. Because to me, it means something different, and that's really probably one of the interesting parts to this. Because if you're talking about score, absolutely. It's the end result, and so you could say lovey-like represents a lopsided, you know, ass-whipping. But in my opinion, this loss wasn't derived by that. This was an aggressive attempt. It just didn't work out. We had a lot of bad bounces, some bad decisions, right? It was quicksand.
Yeah.
Right? After that first interception, where that first drive was terrific, phenomenal, methodical.
Yeah.
That shot they took was the right shot.
Absolutely.
Mike was open. Ball was a little bit to the wrong direction. Lights definitely played something in it. Mike couldn't make the play on the ball, and all of a sudden, you have that first block falls.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then another block falls, and so on and so forth, and it just got to be ugly, and like the bard, or the thespian, Keanu Reeves said in The Replacements, it was like quicksand.
Well, I think, you know, the reason I call it a lovey-like loss is just, you know, the disappointment, the build-up, the excitement. Hey, this football team's 6-6 with four games to go, and you drop all four. I mean, that was kind of, you know, the anticipation building up, and we talked about it, and I wrote about it last week. The, you know, can you feel the difference, the excitement, the change in the air? And, you know, again, I watched the game. I rewatched the game. I saw some things that were good. And I saw some things that were bad. And I saw how it kind of just slowly slipped away. Injuries was a big part of that. I mean, once Ayers went out, you've already lost Jacquees Smith. Now you're expecting Will Golson and Noah Smith and Devontae. I already forgot his name. The
talk about the linebacker?
There's a Levante, a Devontae, and another name that's very close to that. Greg Allman pointed out the trap of the three.
The three-way trap.
These are the new defensive end, but it's good, you know, played like 30 snaps in that game. But again,
the 70 number
there
guy.
There was no push, no pressure, no. I mean, a guy like Carson Palmer is just going to sit back there and pick you apart all day long. I mean, he just had way too much time. And again, if he didn't have talented receivers, you can get away with that a little bit. But he's got guys that know how to get open in this league. Yeah. And why in the hell is Larry Fitzgerald considering retiring? The guy
he should play for another 30 years.
He should play another 5 years. Yeah. Milk it. You know what I mean? I mean, he's a great talent. And but I was disappointed. Going back to my original point is I didn't expect a 40-7 loss in a Dirk Cutter regime. I just didn't expect that this year. But I'll say this, a more lovey-like loss is this team getting hammered by a team who hasn't scored a touchdown. This team losing to a team that has a running back that hasn't gained 50 yards rushing yet in a game this year. And he go off for 150 yards. You know what I mean? The Rams have soundly beat this team the last 2 years. You can go back to that first game, but they were sound. I mean, they were lucky to still be in the game, in my opinion. I mean, they were out-physicaled in that game. Last year, it wasn't even a contest. I mean, it was over by halftime.
Truth be told, though, last year was because of the ketchup and mustard.
No, I don't blame that.
It wasn't the ketchup and mustard?
No, it was end of the year, Christmas coming up, guys saying, we don't have a chance.
In my head, it was the ketchup and mustard.
And you know what it was? It was the Rams' last game in St. Louis, and they really wanted to send the home fans out with a win. No, they didn't
care at all.
They just got their ass kicked in that game, and that's okay. But and isn't that funny that against a team that has beaten the Buccaneers soundly the last 2 years, everyone is expecting this to be a win. I mean, not everybody in the world, but most Buck fans are expecting this to be a win, and it needs to be a win. This is a critical game with
we're
Denver
already,
and Carolina.
We are
up.
Already at must-win games.
Well,
Mark.
But you know what? Dirk said it this week twice now. You know, it's a one-game season. Every game is a one-game season. So if you look at it like that, then every game should be a must-win. I mean, that's the way you've got to look at it.
Well, and that's the way winning programs look at it. Like, I always bristle because mathematically it certainly isn't, and it just annoys me intellectually. But the reality is what Dirk is saying and what Bill Belichick says coming in is every game is our win.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that someone steals from us is an offense, right? We screwed up. They didn't win. We screwed up. And you got to be able to get that into your head to the point where, like, people say, well, who really expects us to go into Arizona and win last week? Damn well, everyone in that locker room should have expected it.
Sure,
right? Because that's what they're paid to do. They are paid to go out and win.
I relayed the story 100 times. Somebody asked Warren Sapp, you know, what do you think your record's going to be this year? And he said 16-0, and the reporters are like, seriously, Warren? He goes, I play for the damn team. Which one of these do you want me to tell you we're going to lose?
Yeah.
I don't expect to lose any of them.
Yeah, I'm paid to win all of them.
Yeah, you know? And you know, this was a frustrating loss because you thought it would be a more competitive game. And it wasn't that, you know, you had that bad second quarter.
Second quarter, man.
You know, just everything went the wrong way. And Jameis just had a bad game.
Absolutely.
There's just no, and I asked Dirk about that. I don't remember if it was Monday or Wednesday, but I asked Dirk specifically, I think it was yesterday, was this a game where, you know, we and the media, the fans, and the team talked about the Atlanta game and how Winston took the underneath at times. He mm-hmm. checked the ball down, patted him on the back. He wasn't trying to be super aggressive. He took what the defense gave him. In this game, there was very little of that. And I asked Dirk, but was that by design, though? And he says, yeah. I mean, we knew we had to put the ball down the field. They play a lot of man coverage.
Yeah, you had to take your shots. Absolutely.
And that, you know, Atlanta was playing more of a zone. Dropping their safeties deep, we knew, you know. So it depends on what the defense is going to give you, and so, you know, they knew there were shots there, and there were opportunities to keep the chains moving. Jameis just had a bad game. There's just no other way about it. His mechanics weren't great, and his accuracy was just off in that game.
Well, and he had a bad game, and we couldn't run, right? They were rotating extra men in the box, which I didn't anticipate. But we weren't able to take advantage of it, so they could continue to do that with, you know, with impunity. They just left guys all over the place. When Doug went out, Charles couldn't find any room, and then we got behind so far.
Well, and Luke goes down.
Luke goes down
before Martin. I mean, I believe before Doug did. I mean,
within a few plays, almost.
Pretty close. And I talked to Cameron Braid on, again, kind of my memory shot. I think it was Monday in open locker room because we had open locker room.
No one could challenge
when
you.
They
just
win.
Say Monday.
Yeah, you're right. Cameron could. But
don't call him Cam.
Like he remembers. But anyway, I said, how, you know, Luke goes down, Doug goes down. Now, how much of your playbook does that take away? And he said, it takes away some of our playbook. I mean, because now we've got to reshuffle personnel. Guys who aren't real familiar playing, like Cameron Braid at times was the blocking back, right, for Charles Sims. And we saw him get blown up a few times. He wasn't used to that. He didn't do that. He said, I didn't get a lot of reps in practice on that. So just like going back to 2011 when Ernest Graham blew out his Achilles.
Absolutely.
And they lost their fullback or lost someone else. Who did they lose
was
that
game? Was it Cook that year?
Maybe so. I don't remember
or
who
ask
it was.
You. I can't remember. I ran out of the fullback. If you're talking about the fullback.
Yeah. Lost that. So literally, you know, a third or a half of their playbook goes out the window as far as the running game goes. And we saw what happened in that game. Again, you know, Dirk is smart enough to try and cover up these things. But when your lead blocker, the guy who kind of is the point man in the run game as far as the attack goes, and then your best running back goes out, that certainly limits. And then when you, as you mentioned, you start getting behind and you start throwing. I'll say this about Dirk. As a offensive coordinator, he ran the ball more. And again, it's easy to sit here and say, well, if Doug starts averaging 6-7 yards a carry, you just keep feeding him the ball in Atlanta, which he didn't do. But, you know, and I complain about Jimbo Fisher about this a lot. He's got a Heisman candidate, right, number four. You keep handing the ball, eventually they're going to break one. You know what I mean? You're going to get your 3.5 yards a carry, you figure. If you do, you average that, you just keep the chains moving. You know, sometimes offense coordinators, and again, that's why he attempted the field goal at the end, right? What did that field goal really mean? 10 points, 7 points. It's not a big deal. We remember John Gruden against Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Kicking, you know,
meaningless.
And Jimbo did it Saturday against Louisville. It didn't matter. It's fourth down, you know. And I don't remember who it said. Maybe it was on Twitter. Maybe I heard it on TV. When your offensive coordinator is also your head coach, they're going to kick those field goals at the end because, again, it's a reflection of them as a play caller too. You know what I mean? A head coach might say, you know what, just go for it. But any points on the board is good points when you're with the play, even if you're down, you know, 42 points like Florida State was.
Well, and this is one of those things where, and we knew this going in, if you're going to have that gambler mentality, the go for it, go for the jugular, mm-hmm. right, the anti-Lovey, mm-hmm. right, which seems to be something that people gravitate towards a lot with Dirk, the gunslinger. Mm-hmm. He's always going to take those risks. He's always going to take those risks. Then when he takes his foot off the pedal a little bit in Atlanta or seemed to take the foot off, then everyone loses their breakfast, right? And then in this game, kicking a meaningless field goal, right, you have to live or die by that. And it's funny because you said earlier you didn't expect maybe a blowout score with this team. With Mike Smith's defense, in my mind, that's one of the things that you run the risk of. And that's not a slight to Mike Smith mm-hmm. or a slight to the defense, but if you're going to have a gambling defense, which he does, right, some days you're the hammer and some days you're the nail.
Yeah.
And if you get a guy like Carson Palmer who sees those things coming,
right.
guess what? Every once in a while, you're going to either have to go, you know what, I can't pull this crap on this guy, or we're going to have to just lace him up and play straight.
And I don't think he gambled as much as I would have probably gambled, particularly when you lose, you know, your other pass rushing defensive end and Robert Ayers. I mean, there were times, I'd have to go back and look specifically at it, but Gerald McCoy was getting double teamed, sometimes triple teamed at times, because they had no fear.
Mark, you know that can't possibly be true. Gerald McCoy is just an overrated defensive tackle. Everyone who is anyone knows that.
I'm telling you, the guy got
beat
out of him in that game. And there were many opportunities for one on ones with the defensive ends, and they just couldn't get there.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't even close. And again, let me go back to what I was saying about Dirk. Again, I love Dirk. I love his aggressive mentality. I'm the same way. Let's go back. Let's simplify it a little bit. We're playing PlayStation. And it's no fun to run the ball in Madden, right? You know, it's fun to call the audible and send the deep flies, and you try and complete the 70-yard passes every time. And in hindsight, you know what I mean? Sometimes you need those 4 or 5 yard gains. I'm not saying that Dirk has given up on the running game by any stretch at all. And certainly last week when you lose Doug Martin and you lose Luke Stocker, you have to almost abandon the running game, particularly when you give up 24 points in a quarter. I think it was 24 points.
It was in the second quarter.
I get that part of it. I just hope Dirk doesn't get away from, you know, continuing to pound the ball, because Dirk even said in the preseason when the running game wasn't going good, he said, "Well, it doesn't matter because, you know, running backs have to get in the rhythm. We have to continue to handle the ball. You know, the offensive line has to get in the rhythm." I just don't know that we've seen that. Now, it worked fine in Atlanta. Okay, it worked fine. They were able to complete. Jameis was on. You know, he got in that zone that he gets in at times and couldn't be stopped. Worked out fine. I just, you know, I hope Dirk, you know, continues to, you know, try and keep defenses honest a little bit by running the ball. And sometimes, you know, going three and out, running the ball three times isn't the worst thing in the world either. Because now, let me go back to one other thing that I know that some fans were frustrated at. Going into the end of the second quarter, three straight passes, incompletions, 17 seconds off the clock, punt the ball to Arizona, boom, they go down, immediately score. I love what Dirk said about that Monday. He goes, "Hey, everybody was patting us on the back when we did that against the Falcons.
Right.
It worked.
Yeah.
So we're great." And then we come out in the third quarter and we score a touchdown and boom, we're up 31-14 and we're the smartest people in the world. It didn't work. "What do you want me to say?" he said. "It didn't work. We threw three incompletions." You know what I mean?
And
you can't have it both ways.
Well, no, as a fan, you can. And that's the thing that's frustrating, right? That's exactly right. The way a fan will. And that's not a slight to the fan either. That's what they're going to do. What becomes interesting is that sort of evaluation is always going to be in hindsight. And now that he's the head coach, it's going to be even more amplified.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What I always like to look at is if the play was, you got to move that phone. If the play was executed, right? If the guy's open and we miss him,
mm-hmm.
right? If the hole's there and you don't hit it, if the screen would have worked had a block been made, right?
Right.
That's not on the coach. That's not
true.
On the coordinator. That's on the players, and that's okay too. Because guess what? The other guys are paid to play, right? But that's when we have Chris call in. Maybe he'll do some of that eval, sort of forward looking for the Rams, but. As a play caller, as a coach, you've got to look at those things when you're looking at a film review and go, you know what? We did the right thing. I mean, the perfect example is that first pass got intercepted. That was perfect. That was exactly what you want. You had your single coverage. You had your big receiver.
Yeah.
He had every the only possible scenario that play doesn't work is the one that happened.
Right.
Right? And you look at it and you go, well, crap. You know, sometimes it doesn't work.
No, I was you know, Scott talked about it twice. One time, I don't remember where he talked about it, maybe during the course of the game we were watching it together, and then in something that he wrote on Monday or maybe right after the game, you know, that was the wrong. You can't go after Peterson there. He's an all-pro guy, and I completely disagree.
On that play?
Yeah, I said.
Oh, he's crazy.
I said, look, you've got your number 7 overall draft pick, right? I mean, this is, you're not throwing that ball to Adam Humphries, in other words, right? And Dirk has been preaching to Jameis, take your shots. When you have the one-on-one, you got to play it. I don't know what happened to Mike. I don't know if he lost the ball in the lights.
Yeah, he
what
lost
happened
in the
because
lights.
He never adjusted. He never even put his arms up. Had to.
Yeah, you can see it real time. That stadium is gorgeous,
mm-hmm.
right? but it is very, very interestingly lit, let's say. There's hot spots, right?
Right.
So I'm not giving him a pass because guess what? You did your warm-ups out right? Yeah. You got to learn how to do it.
Right.
But
and you should know. And you should know if you're one-on-one and you're going to the end zone, there's no safety help there. The ball's probably coming your way.
If I don't see it over this shoulder,
right.
It's over this shoulder. Worst case, I'm knocking him down.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's one of those things where you got to learn those things. Savvy vets know that. Mike's not a savvy vet yet.
No.
But at any rate, listen, I want to do a couple things because I know Chris is calling it at 9:30. We're going to move this towards the Rams discussion. But I want to thank a couple of people as we get in here. I want to thank the listeners, obviously, who are tuned into the show. I want to get some feedback as well. As you guys do the reviews on the podcast, I did go back and read our reviews. We did get our first negative review, actually, in the 11 years of significance, said that our podcast style was outdated. So if you think that this is an outdated format and there's other things that other podcasts are doing, please let us know. Send it into info@whatthebuck.net because we're always looking to grow, improve, enhance, etc. But we've got our first tailgate coming up, Mark. And as you know, tailgating is a big thing about what we do, both with What the Buck and with What the Buck Really Matters. Our tailgates, on average, throw off about $1,000 a tailgate towards a name charity. So our smallest year, I think we did $5,000 a year. Our average year is going to do $8,000. And we're hoping, because we brought on some amazing sponsors this year, to increase that even more. This first tailgate, the beneficiary is One Voice, which is our pediatric cancer partner, also the beneficiary of our Trunk Slammer Invitational Golf Tournament we hold annually. We're also doing collections for Paul's Project. We're collecting multicolored socks as well as writing pens for the families that are working with Paul's Project. So if you want to come tailgate with us, you can go to our site, click on the tailgate link. We actually released an interesting info video tonight that tells you some of the rules of the tailgate. It's pretty fun. I think it's a little kitschy. And you get a chance to meet some of the people behind that experience that you guys get to take part in. 3316 West Ohio. We will be opening the gates at 11 for food and drink. You guys can park before that, obviously.
Well, let me add, this is a real question I have about your tailgate. Where do you guys, do people just park in the regular lots and then walk over to
some
where
do.
You guys are? Or is there areas around the tailgate to park?
Our tailgate is a parking lot as well. Now, we don't own the lot. We simply take our space. We pay for our spaces.
Right.
Brian, who owns that lot, does have some available parking. It's first come, first serve. But there's parking all over that area. We have people that come over from over on lot 3. Mm-hmm. We have people that Uber to it. So you can park wherever you want to. There's no tie between us and the parking.
Do you guys ever send a golf cart to pick up media members from lot 5 to bring them over?
We have
some point this year, I guarantee you, one of your guys somewhere has a golf cart. It could load it up on the back of their truck and come pick me up at one point this year. And if they do that, I will come to your.
Well, we'll have some blue M&Ms for you.
I'm not coming.
I know you're not. But we do want to thank our sponsors. Bill Curry Ford is our platinum sponsor and our tailgate sponsor.
Steakhouse Elite
is a gold sponsor.
I saw them in Publix the other day.
You
got
to get them.
I finally looked.
Get those burgers, man. They will change your life.
Beautiful.
Tito's Vodka, providing our vodka libations. And I want to announce today that Pepin Distributing has come on full-fledged as a partner for our tailgate as well. They're providing all the beer for our tailgate. The team can will be all over the place. And those guys at Team Pepin have been absolutely phenomenal. So we're looking forward to a great season. Our new flyer went out with all the information. If you want to know about that, follow us on social media as well as on our mailing list, and you'll get a game day flyer with all the tailgate information that Jay Hatch put together. It is phenomenal.
Can I bring up a stat? And I don't ever give Joe Bucks fan credit at all because I don't like him. Did I just say that?
You did. I'm not editing it.
I'm just kidding. Lee and I get along pretty good.
Lee's a good egg.
But Lee, I got to give him credit. He came up with a good stat the other day, and we were talking about it today in an open locker room, and it doesn't have anything to do with what we're saying here except for the fact the Bucks are playing at home on Sunday. Since John Gruden's been fired, how many wins have the Buccaneers had?
Oh, Lord.
Let's play the Price is Right game. I'll go high-low until you guess it. And go.
17.
Ding, ding, ding. Well, that was easy.
How many did John have in his final year?
So 5. I don't know. They were 9-7. They were 9-7. 5 home wins.
Yeah. I didn't say home wins.
Oh, yeah. I knew how many they had. Yeah. But I'm talking about home wins.
Yeah.
Since that, wow, 17. That's
A brutal run of retreads and missed opportunities. It has been terrible.
That's why, bringing this up to point out, that's why, in my mind, this game is so crucial.
It is.
Game that
home game.
You've got to be able to beat this football team. They are not a good football team.
They're not. And
I mean, they have components of their team that's excellent.
They're not.
Which match up very well with the Buccaneers. And I'm sure Chris will talk about that. You know, there are things that they're going to be able to exploit in the Buccaneers with their strengths. But the Buccaneers should be able to counter some of the things that they do that they don't do well, in other words.
At some point, if you plan on building a program that can compete for a championship, you have to stop hoping to win and expect to win.
Yeah.
And at home, you have to expect to win more. Right? For our Dungeons & Dragons geeks, there's got to be like a +5 modifier to hit points. That was an obscure reference for any D&D guys out there. That's what we do. We bring that at What the Buck. Maybe that's why we're outdated. But you've got this opportunity, the crown jewel, the new boards, all of the work that's gone on. Brian right. Ford's done a phenomenal job. When I was out there with the Buckaholics, by the way, I got a shout out to the Buckaholics and the group out there that tailgated there, phenomenal. I went down to talk to Brian before the game. I said, listen, Brian, these guys have been phenomenal. They probably had 70 people at this tailgate. You've got, you know, hundreds of Bucks fans in here. He said, let me know who they are. He dropped a nice mail out to them, thanking them for coming out there. The team has reached out so much. I'm hoping we have a great crowd. In fact, if you look at the Rams media stuff, which I'm sure you did, and even talking with the other Rams media folks, they expect an angry crowd. They expect an angry team who just got their teeth kicked in after winning against the Falcons, going out there and getting just curb stomped by the Cardinals, right? They expect this team to be angry. They expect the crowd to be angry. And I saw Mike Smith in his press conference says he hopes the defense has trouble, our defense has trouble,
yeah,
calling plays.
Sure.
Which is absolutely what this town has to become again.
Yeah.
During the heyday, this town became a football town, mm-hmm. and then we started to lose, and then it all fell apart.
Right.
So it's got to get to that level again.
Well,
so,
they're going to have to win back some of the fans that the Rowdies have taken over. You know, the Rowdies have just really gained. I'm just kidding.
Dude, what's funny is the Rowdies do a great game day.
And they
got a great stadium,
a great
and they got Rouse Mob, who are phenomenal.
Hey, and our people at Seminole Hard Rock are big sponsors over there. And,
sure.
You know, it's a great time. I haven't went yet. I just keep hearing about how
I
great
need
it
to
is.
Get over there. Our boy Pepper does the TV
yes.
stuff
Mike
and all that
tells
stuff.
Me all the time. Anytime you want to go, we'll go via the Seminole Hard Rock.
Of course.
We'll be VIP.
We'll be VIP. Nice. It'll be fancy. Yeah. Well, we should do that. That'd be a fun time. But let's transition back to this.
Let's talk soccer the rest of the show.
I can't because we'd have to talk about
something. I've already said everything I know about it.
I would say the word nil a lot because I used to watch World Cup on PBS.
Yes. The German soccer one on Saturday
nil.
Evenings.
1-0.
Yep, I remember that.
At any rate, we got Chris calling in a second. We're going to be leading to the Rams. We were all wrong except for Chris on the prediction. Chris is the only guy who predicted that the Cardinals would win. But he did not predict the curb stomping that we received. I do want to also point out, you guys have put out some great content this week, as you always do, on PeterReport.com. We've put out some content. You didn't care for Rick's article, but we've got our articles are starting to come out more regularly, which is great.
Again, let me just say it was a well-written article.
Yeah. No, I wasn't busting your balls. Like, some people are going to like articles, some aren't, and mm-hmm. that's totally okay. But the nice thing is we're really trying to up that ante a little bit and you know, taking your lead. You guys produce great content. We're trying to produce great content on our site. So
great. Thanks for trying to steal our readers. Appreciate
I don't see it as a steal your readers.
I pretty much look at it like that.
Any more than I see you guys throwing watch parties is a big deal or any more as I see you guys.
Wait till we start our tailgates next year.
You should definitely do that. Follow Joe's lead with that. At any rate. So we got the Rams coming in 9-3 over the Seahawks. Is that because the Rams defense is just that damn good? Or is it because the Seahawks are not... They are not who they think they are.
I didn't watch that game. I have the...
way to prepare.
I haven't watched it yet. I've got the...
this is why we invite Mark on the show.
Or whatever, you know, and I can go back and look, but I just haven't had a chance to yet. And I'll just say this. I did watch the entire Monday night game when they played the 49ers, which may have been the most boring, worst game I've ever sat through. That's not true. I watched a Thursday night matchup with... Tennessee and Jacksonville like 3 years ago. That may have been the worst NFL game that I sat and watched. And that's not true. I've watched a lot of Bucks games.
Well, thank God Chris called in because he actually studied this stuff. Hey, is this Chris from the former podcast, Bucks Brief Podcast?
Who else
yeah,
would it be?
That would be me. That would be me.
It's good to have you, sir. And Mark is, of course, asking the rude question about who else would it be. Listen, we've been prank called before on this show.
You have not.
We have.
Not since I've been here.
No, but you only come like 30 minutes late and all that sort of stuff you normally do. It's all good.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, welcome to the show. For those of you who don't know who Chris is, get out from under your rock. BBP Chris. Former host, creator, originator of Bucks Brief Podcast, comes out of retirement to join forces with What the Buck and give us our previews. How are you doing this week, sir?
I just finished my Steakhouse Elite Burgers earlier. I'm drinking some Tito's vodka. I'm doing fantastic, of course.
I love everything you just said. So glad to have you on the show, Chris. Now, I'd asked Mark a leading question because I thought he was prepared for this, and he wasn't, and I apologize to Mark because I did throw that without preparing him, so that's not his fault. It's mine. But I know you have done some film review. Tell us and tell our listeners what they can expect to see versus this Rams defense that people are kind of wetting the bed over.
It's really it's an interesting situation right now for me, Derek and Mark, because I just have a bad vibe about this game. I don't know why. I can't put my finger on it yet.
I'll tell you why, because they've got their asses handed to them by virtually the same team the last 2 years, including a crappy quarterback named Case Keenum.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, I get it. The big point about... I'm getting feedback, by the way, Derek.
You are? All right.
We're giving you feedback, all right.
Hearing myself.
Chris
there
sucks.
We go. It's
terrible.
It's done now,
his
I think.
Voice is bad.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. That was
my no, the big thing, and I know we can reference last year's game as well, but I think the key component about that one was missing not only your starting linebacker, middle linebacker, and Quan Alexander, but the backup, Bruce Carter, was out as well. So the big plays that went in that game last year, the two big plays that I remember from Tavon Austin, I believe, was on Ori Lemon. I think they pulled off the practice squad to be the starter at middle
the
linebacker.
The mighty Ori
game,
Lemon.
So.
Be careful. The mighty Ori Lemon.
So it's I tried watching both games of Rams film. And let me tell you, if you ever need to fall asleep at night,
thank
just
you.
Put on the Rams film.
Thank
it's
you.
It's great.
That was the Monday night game that I stayed up and watched a couple weeks ago. That was that was almost impossible to watch.
It's
two
brutal.
Bad quarterbacks.
Brutal. If you look at it, and I hate saying the term on paper, and I know you just mentioned this, Derek and Mark had talked about this, is if I hate saying must win. I hate that because every game really should be a must win. But if you look at how this team matches up, these two teams match up, if you look at opening game, the excitement that's going to be there, you know, revamped stadium, everything that you guys talked about, this really is a huge win. And rebounding, really, let's see how this team responds from the blowout loss that they suffered this past Sunday. But I think it comes down really to this, because we know the stat, the Rams haven't scored an offensive touchdown this season, but the Bucs also haven't had a defensive turnover this season as well.
Can you hold
on? Takeaway. We'll refer to it as Lovey's term. Takeaway.
Chris, could you please explain what that is? As a Bucs fan, I'm only vaguely familiar with it on the other side of the field.
So I think it's going to be who does that first. Are the Rams going to score an offensive touchdown, or are the Bucs going to get a takeaway? I think that's really going to be whatever happens first. That's my gut. That's who's going to win the game. Look at it too, though. Not only do the Rams not have an offensive touchdown this year, they don't have any interceptions either. So I believe they had two fumble recoveries in the last game. But I'm a little nervous with the running game going into this. If you look at what the Rams did against the Seahawks, they stacked the box. I don't think they had any concern about Russell Wilson in the passing game. I think they felt that they could handle those wide receivers. I believe the Bucs are more talented at the wide receiver position. I don't think personally one-on-one matchups, the Rams match up very well against the Bucs receivers, specifically Mike Evans. We'll see if Vincent Jackson will show up this game. A lot of stacking the box. We know Mark Barron, Alec Ogletree, who I believe was absent from last year's game. They got Robert Quinn back. So we know the front seven from the Rams, and they rotate a lot of guys at defensive tackle. You'll see guys like Dominic Easley from Florida who will come in, Michael Brockers, William Hayes, all these different guys. And we know Aaron Donald, who's one of the best three techniques in the league. They'll rotate a lot of those guys in. They'll put a lot of pressure. They'll stack the box. But
not,
I think
not
where
one of the best. He is the best.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
throw that
you
in
guys, you guys mentioned where do we match up well. I think it's on the corners. If you look at those one-on-one matchups, and the Seahawks were even able to take advantage of it too with Tyler Lockett, their speed wide receiver. I think we match up very well when you look at those one-on-one matchups. And when they go, Derek, I pointed this out to you, I think, earlier in the week.
Yep.
When they go just the single safety and you've got the matchups on the outside, I think that's really where we can start taking advantage of it. And when they drop two safeties back, it seems like they're dropping 25 yards back in coverage. I don't know if that was in design because they were playing the Seahawks, what that was, but then it opens up the middle of the field a little bit. My biggest concern, and I'll toss it to you guys, is really establishing the running game. And are they going to be able to do that? And are they going to put the Buccaneers, the Rams defense, put the Buccaneers in third and long situations, which I don't want to see in this game? Have a little bit of concern with Stocker not being back there. Trying to watch Brandon Myers block out of the backfield is kind of painful.
Yeah.
So I'm a little concerned. And Mark, I guess you've been there all week. My gut right now is telling me we're going to see a lot of Jacquizz Rodgers in this game.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, a better between the tackles runner. I think they're going to be prepared for Sims on the outside. They have speed at linebacker. They've got Ogletree. They've got Mark Barron. So running to the outside, I don't know if that's going to be as impactful this week. I want to see what the Bucs can do between the tackles. And I just have this feeling that we're going to see a lot of touches for Rodgers in this game.
Yeah, I would expect that to happen a little bit too. You know, Dirk says, you know, it doesn't matter. I love Dirk, and he was really snippy again today. He's been grumpy all week.
No.
Yeah, he's been grumpy.
We didn't see that coming, did we?
But, you know, somebody asked about, you know, Charles Sims and blah, blah. He says, listen, if Charles Sims was better than Doug Martin, he would be playing. So, yes, there's a drop-off, but he's the guy. Who else are we going to – I mean, what are we going to do? You know? We decided he's the second best running back on the team. Therefore, he's going to play now that the first running back can't. I mean, Dirk just – it's real simple, and I love that. The thing that scares me more about if the Buccaneers can establish a running game, because I don't think they're going to establish a running game. I don't know that they're going to establish a passing game. I think they're going to have to be one of the, I think this is going to be one of those slug it out back and forth games. Maybe an ugly game. It may be a 13-10 type game. But I don't know if the but the thing that concerns me the most is how are the Bucs going? And I don't like Todd Gurley. I'm not a huge Gurley fan. I thought Jameis got robbed of the NFC Rookie of the Year last year. As far as that goes, you know, Gurley didn't run the ball well in St. Louis against the Buccaneers last year. But here's what scares me. Noah Spence at 243 pounds, Howard Jones at another 250 pounds as your defensive ends. Yeah. How are you setting an edge? Now, you can bring Will Golston in. You can set one side. But that scares me a little bit. And
it should.
And I think the Buccaneers, if I were them, I'm doing what they've seen a lot of, and I'm stacking the box. I'm bringing the safeties up. Yes, you run the risk of getting beat over the top, but I'm going to say that I'm going to take a chance on and I'm going to make Case Keenum beat you in a
Yeah,
in
Case Keenum is not Carson Palmer.
You know, he's not. No. But the thing about him, a little bit different than Carson, and the players have talked about it this week, 1, 2, 3, get the ball out of your
Absolutely.
Hands. He's not going to sit back there and first read, second read, third read, and spend all day back there.
But that plays also into the concept of you've got to keep the game in front of you a little bit. If you want to gamble, if you're Coach Smith and you want your guys to gamble, you get up and press and you stay there because he's going to try and get it out in three steps.
Right.
You can take that risk. If you have anyone who can get close to him, right, that becomes, and that's where we got screwed in Arizona. We had no one that could get there within 5 seconds.
Right.
Right, he had a legit 5 seconds, right. So he could get to his second and third progression. Carson reads quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, these corners, whether you're talking about Altron Werner, whether you're talking about Brent Grimes, whoever it happens to be out there, they're going to have to hold up, and if they're going to let the guy catch it in front of them, you better damn well make the tackle.
Right.
Because you got to live to play another down.
And the Buccaneers missed Quan, and we've defended Quan against PFF's rankings last year, which says he missed, I don't know, 30 tackles or 27, whatever it was, and didn't have a good year. He had a bad game tackling on Sunday in Arizona. And that was one of the things we talked to Quan about, or I did before the season started. He said, yeah, I did miss a lot of tackle last year. That's not going to happen this year. I'm going to change. And he just didn't have his, you know, he was lights out against Atlanta, 17 tackles, whatever it was. And he had, I don't know, 11 or 12
missed
miss
tackles
game.
In that game, too. That was interesting. He could have had 23 tackles.
But you know what? Derek Brooks missed tackles. You know what I mean?
The other guys are paid, too.
They're going to miss a few, but he just got exposed a couple times on a couple of his, and it turned out to be kind of long games. He's got to wrap up. They've got to get Gurley stopped and take that chance. Do the blueprint that San Francisco used. That was a boring game. San Francisco's offense is not as good as the Buccaneers' offense by any stretch. They nickel and dimed them. They took their shots. It was a low-scoring game. I think they scored a couple touchdowns late to make it like 28-0. But
right.
But they knew the Rams weren't going to do anything. They had a great game plan against St. Louis. I mean, it was against Los Angeles, and they were able to stop them. Hopefully the Buccaneers take a page out of that. I don't necessarily think blitzing Case Keenum is a good idea because he is going to get the ball out quickly. And so if you don't get there, if you don't time it perfectly and you don't get through a gap, then you're leaving an opportunity for Case Keenum to exploit your team because he's not going to do it just by arm talent and arm strength and dissecting defenses and using his brain. He's not going to do it that way. He's going to do it if the defense makes some mistakes.
Chris,
yeah, Mark, you mentioned too, and I was thinking about this earlier this week. You were talking about the game that Quan had last week, and I started doing a comparison between Quan on the defense and Jameis on the offense, and it's almost they're parallel to me. They're either on or they're off.
Yeah.
And we've seen great games from Jameis, and we've seen really poor games from Jameis like this last week. It's on or off, but it's understandable. Second year in the league. I was thinking about this with Quan. Quan's technically still a rookie. You know, he was suspended those games. He hasn't played a full NFL season. He didn't play against the Rams last year. He's got those on games where he's making all kind of plays, and he's also got those games where he's off, where he's missing tackles and he's missing assignments. So both these guys seem hit or miss for me. They're on or they're off. There's no in between.
And Quan told me too, when I asked him about the tackle thing, he said, listen, I didn't really know what I was doing out there. I was just kind of reacting, trying to make plays. I mean, you know, he didn't really understand what he was doing. I do like the fact that he asked Jameis, how do I be a leader on defense? What do I do? And Jameis said, well, you need to go ask a defensive guy, you know, that's a defensive leader. I know how I do it offensively. But the big thing Quan did this year, coming in early, meeting with Mike Smith, watching film every day, meeting with his defensive coaches and trying to become more of a student of the game. And I think that's going to benefit him because we know he's an athletic freak. There's no question about that. But But again, the other guys are paid to play too and scheme against you and things like that. And you can be neutralized if all you have is athletic ability. You know, and you can play in this league a long time without a ton of athletic ability if you've got the smarts. So put those two together and he'll be a good running. I mean, I'm sorry, a good a linebacker. But I'm still nervous. If they can stop Gurley, I don't see how the Buccaneers lose this game. But if Gurley goes off for 130, 140 yards, that's what scares me. And, you know, if I'm the Rams, I'm running two tight ends and I'm attacking the edges and I'm trying to go get to the second level and keep Levante occupied and getting him out, you know, around the edge.
Well, and that's where a guy like Daryl Smith, we haven't, and it would be interesting to see if our boy, what's his name? Jimmy Johnson. If Jimmy Johnson gave us our play counts, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would be interested to find out how much nickel we're playing versus base. Because when we're in base and Smith's in there, we should have the ability to shut some of this down and get those tackles.
You're right. I would play very little nickel in this game.
If they're in two tight end, then you can. You can stay in base and do what you do.
Right.
But I want to switch over a little bit back to on the Bucs on offense, because Chris, you said something interesting, and I want to get your opinion on what you saw out of Jameis. Because when you mentioned that you think we have more talented receivers than the Seahawks, I don't know that you mean talent per talent, but also physical size. Mike Evans is a tough matchup. Vincent Jackson is a tough matchup physically. Now, Vince drops that pass for the first down on the 3-yard line, which just kills my heart, but he's known to drop passes. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things he does. But those two guys physically are fairly stout against almost any corners in the league. What is it you see Jameis being able to exploit, and do you believe there's any knock-on effect from Arizona coming back that may preclude him from doing that?
I don't think so. If you look at it, and Mark knows LaMarcus Joyner, did he play safety for you all at FSU?
He played all over the backfield. It was real multiple, but when he got to the NFL with his size being like 5'8", he certainly had to go to the nickel spot.
So there you go. I'm circling that right now because he gets the majority of the snaps there along with, I believe it's TJ McDonald, which I believe is about a 6'1" corner. There's their height, which I expect him to match up with Evans. But if you're going to exploit anyone on that on the secondary, it's going after LaMarcus Joyner. Very, very aggressive. You see him kind of coming up in the box a lot. I do like the matchups. I like the matchups with Mike Evans right now against anyone because, you know, regardless, you guys mentioned missed the ball in the lights earlier, that he still, against Patrick Peterson, was catching balls. And they target him, 17 times in that game, whatever it was.
It was 17.
It doesn't make a difference.
Actually. 230 targets.
Yeah.
I mean, Dirk's going to be aggressive. If the plan is to throw the ball at Mike Evans. I like the matchups. We know what Mark Barron did when he was in Tampa. I'd like to see the tight ends utilized a little bit more.
I was going to ask you about that, Chris. What are they, you know, looking at the film, that's something that I told Scott I expect them to do a little bit more of is you know, utilize the middle of the field, try and get some matchups with ASJ or Cameron a little bit too. We know Jameis, you know, loves to use the tight end, but I don't know what the focal point of Dirk's offense is. If that's a, you know, on the back burner, if there's nothing else, you go to those guys. You know, is there some opportunities for the tight ends to match up well? You talk about the linebackers. You know, Mark Barron was drafted here to shut down the tight end as a safety, right? The Jimmy Grahams of the world, things like that. Now that he's a linebacker, he's got some more of those responsibilities. You know, I don't know that you go necessarily after him, but can some of these other linebackers and even safeties be exploited by the tight ends, you think?
Absolutely. I'm waiting for this matchup. I'm waiting to see if the tight ends are going to be used more exclusively in this offense, you know, with who knows with the running game, what's going to happen with Doug being out, with Stocker probably being out as well. But there's opportunities there. I mentioned before, when they're dropping too deep, they're dropping very deep. I did a comparison, kind of the overhead
views. That was very odd.
Of how far they're dropping 22 to 25 yards, and I even hit up Derek on social media. I'm like, have you seen this from a safety drop and what they're doing? Because it just opens up the middle of the field. And when they're going single high and they're matching up on the outside, I watched Luke Wilson come wide open for the Seahawks. They had Tyler Lockett one-on-one on the outside, and Wilson stared him down the whole time. But Luke Wilson was uncovered in the middle of the field. I like the middle of the field. They're so aggressive, I think, with their linebackers and how they come up. I think it's an opportunity to hopefully utilize a guy like Cameron Brate. I'd like to see ASJ used as well. I just don't – like I said, on paper – this seems like, yes, they've got talent on the defensive line. Yes, you know, they've got some other guys in the defense that can play well. But I just feel like this is an opportunity for the passing game to really flourish this week. You're not going to be able to rely, I feel, on the running game. It's an opportunity with these matchups you got. And I agree with you, Mark. I think it's going to be interesting to see if they can start getting the tight ends involved a little bit more.
And really, you know, it goes back to the basics of football. And Derek and I talk about this all the time. And, you know, who can block and who can tackle better? If the Bucs can protect Jameis Winston, he certainly, I think, there's some matchups to exploit. This is a nasty front four, though, and we saw it last year, too, with Chippy. When they hit the quarterback, they try and hurt the quarterback. I mean, this is not the kind of game where you want Jameis to, although he might only get sacked once or twice, you hope that's all at the most, but he doesn't need to take 10 or 15 hits, too, because this is the kind of team that those 10 or 15 hits are going to add up, even to a guy that can take some shots like Jameis Winston. I would just love to see them just keep him as clean as possible in this game. I don't know that it's possible because they are really talented up front. And Greg Williams, as much of a maniac as he is, the guy knows a lot about defense. He's a pretty good defensive coordinator. But we talked to Mark Barron on the conference call this week, and Mark said, you know, the plan is to make Jameis as uncomfortable as possible. That is the key to beating this offense, is if you get pressure and you make Jameis uncomfortable, you know, you can beat him. And so, you know, I don't know if he gave away the game plan there, or if he was, you know, pulling our leg a little bit, too, to try and, you know, get that out there that that's what they're going to do, and they're going to do something different. But it does make sense, right? I mean, you ask Mike Smith, he's going to say,
it's a football truism.
You got to make Case Keenum uncomfortable, get him off his spot.
No one's going to be on that conference call. You know, we're going to let the quarterback be really comfortable today because we expect him to throw the ball to us.
Right, right.
I mean, we're not playing Vinny Testaverde. Why did I have to say that? That was unnecessary.
Jeez Louise.
But it's, Chris, your comment about the tight ends is a very interesting one. And I think that, like Mark said earlier, taking a playbook or a play out of the 49ers book, getting Jameis to get the ball out of his hand quickly, whether it's the quick slants coming from your wide guys, your X and your Z, or whether it's the feint of that, right, mm-hmm. the look to the slant, letting your tight end release, get to the seam, that pass that Jameis loves to drop over the linebacker in front of the safety. In front of the safety is no problem if they're going to play the way they played in the last game, because those screenshots, they were so damn deep. You can't screw it up.
And with an aggressive, very aggressive front four, guys who don't dance, they go straight up the field.
Screen behind.
This is a perfect opportunity to throw those screens.
Yeah, screen behind.
Those safeties and linebackers are dropping deep like that. There should be so many opportunities for some screens here. And, of course, that's what Charles Sims is best suited to do. So,
well, and when you look at on the other side of the ball, so offensively I think we're in violent agreement, the three gentlemen on the podcast today. You've got to take advantage of the passing game. Mm-hmm. I think the running back who plays more is the guy who's going to be best able to pick up the additional rushers, right? And with the fumble, now, Chris, did you go back and rewatch the fumble? That looked like Sims' helmet hit Jameis' elbow, right?
Yeah, I believe that's what it was.
Yeah, and I don't. That's not a slight to him. That sort of stuff happens. It sucks in tight quarters. But I don't know that I know off the top of my head that Sims is a better blocker than Jacquizz is. Jacquizz has got a little bit more experience, but you've got to be able to get that time if he's going to be in there, because if you're going to go to doubles, you're going to go to these configs that allow you more receivers, you've got to get Jameis 4 seconds.
Yeah.
You have to. He has to have 4 seconds. And to your point, Mark, before I go to my defensive point, this hitting the quarterback thing, and it was really loud with the Denver Panthers game, which, and not a Cam fan, not a Panther fan, I still think that was horrible what was allowed to happen.
Yep.
If that is continued, because I've seen Jameis get some hits against Atlanta too. These head coaches have got to start defending their quarterbacks, mm-hmm. and let it be handled on the field. Goodell's not going to handle it.
Right.
But let it be known, listen, I said it before, if I had been Ron Rivera, it would have gotten the timeout or a 15-yard penalty, and that referee would have been told, you fix this or I'm going to fix it, and Simeon doesn't walk off this field.
Exactly.
Right? I'm going to go ahead and end this.
Yep.
Anyway, you got to protect Jameis. He's the franchise, without a doubt.
Yep.
On defense, the concern we have about our small ends, one of the plays that we worked in a lot in the training camp time frame, and the Bucs used to do a lot back in the glory days, is a zone dog or a zone blitz. Now, does Noah know this well enough? Does Howard know this well enough to release that edge, get to the flat, and let a Darryl Smith come in there and cause some confusion by that line, roll your corner, and cause this Case Keenum guy to make his first read? He's going to make his first read and release
right.
it. That's the trap you can set. He's not Carson Palmer.
Right.
He's not going to know it's a zone blitz or a zone dog, right, and go to the secondary read. I think that could be the surprise, and for the turnover, Chris, you're calling for, I think it's going to come on a play like that where we're going to send a guy that they don't expect, and you're going to see a guy roll that coverage, and it may be a Brent Grimes, an Otron Werner, both very savvy guys. You know, so I'm hoping to see some of that. Now, let's get to the fun prediction areas. Chris, we've got you on the call. I want to thank you for joining the call. I want you to let you pimp as well, BYOCB. which is your wildly successful craft beer podcast that you left Bucks Podcasting to go do and do great jobs in. But who are your predictions, and let people know how they can still stay in touch with you, even if it's about not necessarily about Bucks stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if they want to hit me up and talk sports, it's still, as you mentioned earlier, at BBP, Chris. That's Bucks Brief Podcast.
He's like Bucks Brief Diamond as. Dallas Page.
Yeah. BBP, Chris, is my sports account. And then at BYOCB Show is the Twitter for that other show. We'll be at Grove Roots Brewing tomorrow, which is in Winter Haven, hanging out there, checking out their new brewery tomorrow night, Friday evening, for those who listen to the recorded show. So, all right, predictive MVPs. Am I going offense first, Derek?
Yes, sir, offense.
Call me crazy.
Crazy.
I think it's going to happen, one or two big plays. I'm going the former running back from Atlanta Falcons, Jacquizz Rodgers. I think he's going to bust a big play or two in this game. That's who I've got on offense.
I like the pick. Mark Cook, we're going to go to you after that. I love the outlandish pick on that. That's excellent.
Well, spend a few minutes with ASJ today. He's pumped up for this game.
Oh, look at this.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. It's one of the reasons I asked Chris specifically about if he thinks the tight ends can win some favorable matchups. And I think he's gonna be a force in this game. So I'm going to go with ASJ with two touchdowns in this game.
Oh, he's dropping the two touchdown bomb on you too. I am going to go with what is normally a predictable selection, but after last week isn't, but I see a bounce back. It's funny. I am absolutely in man love with Jameis Winston. I have to apologize to the Kirk Creels of the world. Not that I was ever an anti-Jameis guy, but I was not the suck for Jameis. That's just not the way I think about football.
Right.
And while I thought he did well in college, I wasn't, you know, riding his jock. The guy has been phenomenal since he's been here. He seems to be a better person and better leader than he is a football player. I don't believe there's anyone in football that wants to play better Sunday than Jameis Winston, and I expect him to do that on the field. I expect him to go out there and remind people why the hell people were excited about him in week one, and I don't care if he's throwing to ASJ, if he's throwing screen passes to Charles Sims, or if he's hitting Mike Evans for the two touchdowns I expect him to get. I think it's going to be Jameis Winston. I think we're going to remember why this kid's the leader of the team. Now, defensively, I'm going to go to Mark Cook first.
Boy, that's a tough one.
Does Levante David play this week is the real question.
Yeah, he's playing.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I mean, I know that a lot of people thought he was missing in action. And in fact, I saw him on a milk carton at 7-Eleven a little while ago. But he's back. Did I mention that they had a banged up shoulder?
No, you did not.
Yeah, okay. He was on the injury report, I believe, yesterday with a little bit of shoulder. But he's practicing. He's fine,
okay.
I think. But now I'm not going to go him. I'm gonna say Quan. No, I'm not. Actually, I'm gonna go back to the defensive back. I think Altaron Verner is gonna be a guy that's gonna finally
break that turnover streak. He's gonna get the pick.
The guy in the first quarter was as good a cornerback in the league for 15 minutes last week. I don't know if you rewatched the film or not. It's tough to look from the stands at times, but this guy was doing something we didn't see happen at all last year until Sterling Moore was inserted into the starting lineup, and that was actually challenging receivers. Challenging going for the ball. And if you notice, they tended to move away from him after that first quarter. They didn't throw his way a whole lot after that. So smart move by Bruce Arians and Carson Palmer there. But I think Alteron's going to get his opportunity to get his hands on the ball. Somebody's got to get an interception. These cornerbacks had two last year, total two. So, and I was, you know, one of my big things going into the season was, you know, the Buccaneers will
come
have
to us.
This is Tito's vodka I'm staring at. But anyway, I was going to say that, you know, at some point in the first few games, there's going to be a cornerback that has two interceptions in one game, not in 16. And boy, I've been dead wrong about that. They haven't. I asked Dirk about that today too, and he didn't really.
He
like
said,
the
"Ask
question.
Smith."
I said, we saw Grimes miss a potential interception in the end zone. In that game last week.
Good God.
I know. He just glared at me.
There's a reason he's not a receiver, though.
Right. Well, that's true. Of course, Dirk defended him and said, "Yeah, that would have been a really tough catch." I was like, "Yeah, it kind of hit him in the hands." I mean, if you ask Brent that, he's going to say, "No, that was not a tough play. I should have."
If I asked my 4-year-old that, he wouldn't say it was a tough play.
Exactly.
Except the helmet would have been too big.
But I asked Dirk if they've been close on either of the turnovers, and Dirk gave me the kind of the eye roll. He goes, "Close? I don't know. I mean, what would he call close? We don't have any, so I guess no. I mean, you know. Close as we can be to have none, you know, something
I
like that."
I love how angry this man is.
I love
is.
It. I do. You know, and when the media left the press conference today, they were like, "Man, he's true." I said, "You know what? I will take him all day long over the Lovie Smith, you know, Mr. Nice Guy. You know,
if you hated the Lovie, you have to love this. You can't have it both.
Dirk is already pissed about injury questions. He jumped all over us yesterday. He said it again today. He goes, guys, I don't know what you want me to say. I'm not going to tell you anything about injuries. The NFL mandates that we put out an injury report. You will get that. That's all you're going to get from me based on injuries. And then I totally agree why he's saying that.
Sure.
You know.
Absolutely. So you're picking Werner.
Werner.
I hate picking the same guy as someone else, but I that was my setup earlier was for Werner because I do think he's the guy who's going to be able to do that. So I'm going to be on the Werner bandwagon. Chris, who do you see stepping up on the defense? Is it going to be Gerald?
You guys are both almost correct. Did Altron Werner play his best game as a Buccaneer last week?
Yeah, probably.
Well, I think he had a couple years ago against New Orleans where he had a couple picks in that game. That probably was the best one. But anyway.
You guys are right on with the cornerback position. The only problem is the Rams have two wide receivers, and that's it. It's Kenny Britt and Tavon Austin and tight end Lance Kendricks. Other than that, that's it. They're not throwing the ball to anybody else. So I'm going away from Werner, and I want to give it to Grimes, but I'm going to go with the homer pick, and I'm going to say I like Hargraves with a pick, potentially a pick six this week. I like what you mentioned on the blitz, Derek. I think one of the cornerbacks is going to read that, come up and take it to the house. I'm going Hargraves this week to get the first takeaway for our Buccaneers defense in the home opener.
Well, I got to say, assuming that the Bucs are in a decent position in the game at that point, it's not trying to climb back out of a hole, I honestly believe the crowd's going to be crazy. Even after the event that occurred in Arizona, I do expect the crowd to be very good this week.
And the crowd's going to be crazy because they're going to still be excited about Florida State demolishing USF the day before.
Did that get the game sell out yet?
No.
Oh, I didn't think so.
No.
All right, that's what
it's
I was
the Bulls.
Checking.
Why would the Bulls sell out?
I'm sorry, it's a four-hour drive for these loyal Florida State guys.
It's 5 hours, but anyway, I mean, I guess if you're in a driving a BMW like you, it might be 4 hours. But
just saying, should have been a sellout if you guys didn't get your teeth kicked in by Louisville.
It's still going to be a pretty decent crowd.
Sure,
but it's a noon game. I'm not going. My son, he's like, I'm not. I don't want to go out there at noon and sit in the stands. No.
If you guys had curb stomped Louisville last week, would you have gone?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not. I didn't go to Orlando. I'm not going to this game. No. I'm not going anywhere at noon.
Rendax just chimed in FSU reference number four.
Is that all?
This is my least one ever. Under quota. Yeah, you're under quota. Okay. I do want to get scores, and then I want to talk a little bit
I
about
like
Vincent
scores.
Jackson.
They used to advertise with Pewter Report. I remember.
You guys should have provided more value.
The greatest thing once a month is when I had to go in and pick up the check. That was great.
You can still go in there. So, Chris. Score today. You were the only guy who was right last week picking the Cardinals to win. The voice of reason. What is your selection this week?
My Levante David pick was way off, but that's okay.
So was
Mike. I got Mike Evans right. So 2 for 3 last week. I am going 14-9 Bucks. Low scoring, defensive touchdown, one more touchdown. I think it's going to be a very sloppy game. Praying our kicker doesn't miss this week. I think they get 3 field goals, 14-9, Bucks win.
In his defense, it was very tough. The setting there was tough. It was perfect field in a dome.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah, the wind
45 yards.
Those lights, man.
Yeah.
He and Mike Evans were probably commiserating. Jesus. All right, Mark, what's your call on the score?
I'm going to go 17-17. We're going to see a tie.
You're teasing, right?
No, I swear it's going to be a tie. I'm kidding. 17-16 Bucks.
I already wrote 17-17.
Well, you can put 17-17. It wouldn't surprise me.
It would surprise me statistically. I'm going to go 27-10 Bucks with a late score.
Wow.
Late score. 20-10 most of the game and then a late score at the end.
Yeah.
That makes it look a little uglier. Not dissimilar from San Francisco, right? I think it's going to be one of those games. I do think it's going to be one of those sort of slugfests. I think the defense is going to help the team out a bit.
Be patient, Dirk and Jameis. If your defense plays halfway well, there's not a lot of threats to score. They're not going to score a lot of points. Just be patient. You know, I hate to use the term, go back to the Tony Dungy, 17-13 type games, but this is a game.
What style is that? Who else called that style?
I don't know.
Oh, okay, I was just checking.
Just saying. Yeah,
when's the last time the Bucks have blocked a punt? Do you even recall? Was it
Carolina
Dakota
3
Watson
years ago?
Block?
No, it
Carolina
was last
three years ago.
Year, Jeremiah George got one against the Bears.
Okay. Well, yeah. Just saying. The
but before the it was Al Singleton against the Cardinals.
No.
I'm just kidding.
No. Nice Al Singleton.
That far back.
Wow.
Yes.
What a Jamie Duncan reference.
Now you know why you really have me here.
Oh, I never doubted it. All right. There were some questions in the chat room I want to make sure I cover. I also want to thank the listeners in the chat room for joining us live tonight, as well as for spreading the word about the podcast. Vincent Jackson was the topic of conversation. There was some chatter. I know, Mark, you didn't hear the Fire Dirk chatter, but you may have heard the chatter about Vincent not playing well. That, sure, whatever. You may have heard some of the chat about Vincent Jackson not having a good game, and I had heard something, and this is complete, like, I don't have enough data. I should have researched this before, but someone mentioned Vincent kind of sort of walking off or something like that. I don't know what's going on. I didn't see that. He looked like he was engaged in the game. He was engaged on the sideline.
If you want to pick a guy to be your offensive predictive MVP, and maybe I should have, it would be Vincent. He's pissed right now.
Because he dropped that pass and hit him in the hand?
No. People are questioning his integrity. And that's the one thing. And I had somebody ask me that in our Monday mailbag. And I said, I will never question Vincent Jackson's integrity to say he's just playing out a contract or anything like that. But you know, Todd Monken said, and Dirk said, one of the two said this week, well, he played harder this week. That is not a ringing endorsement for a guy. And then Dirk also said yesterday, you know, look, they're either going to have to get in sync or the elements are going to have to change, meaning they're not going to take Jameis out of the game.
Sure.
So so today we got Vince in our normal once-a-week setting in open locker room, and right. I give my boy Pat Donovan credit. He said it. You know, he basically said, so did you, you know, coach said, are you playing harder? And or, you know, did you play harder this game? And he says, come out to practice. Watch the film. He says, don't effing question my integrity. You know,
right.
I play hard all the time. It's not working out. We're not in sync, whatever you want to say, but it's not from a lack of effort or desire to be good. So we'll see what happens. But I think this guy is very motivated to go out and have a heck of a football game because, you know, again, Vince, you can say what you want, you know, that he drops passes and he's 33 years old and he's in 12th or 13th year, whatever it is. And I'm just the kind of guy, character-wise, that I wouldn't question his integrity at all.
No, and I love the guy's human being. I'm fortunate that we've had a chance to work with him in the charity stuff, and he's a hell of a human being and a good football player. And I got into a bit of a Twitter battle during the game because people talking about there being no separation. Well, one of the advantages of being there is I'm getting all 22 real time. There was separation.
Yeah.
He was getting open. The ball wasn't being delivered. Now, sometimes that's because Jameis couldn't. Right, he was there too much pressure. Sometimes they were not on the same page, as you referred to.
Dirk made a good point, too. When you're playing a team that's playing tight man coverage, the catch radius shrinks considerably as opposed to, you know, throwing against the zone. And I think Jameis has always been better, going back to his college days, of playing zone-based teams. You know
absolutely.
What I mean? And anticipating a guy breaking in front of the safety right behind the linebacker, those kind of things. His accuracy is not great. To start with, some of that I think could be attributed to you know, him being a young kid, but also the fact that, you know, his footwork isn't always the greatest. Mechanics get sloppy at times. So, but the window, I mean, Dirk said it. Like, when you got a guy that's playing man, he's in your hip pocket, there's opportunities to catch the ball. However, you know, you've got to get him there. You've got to, there's a tighter spot, a tighter window to get the ball to. So I don't know what I was saying about that. Oh, you were saying about there were opportunities for Vincent to catch the ball. There was. Quarterback just didn't deliver. I'm not going to put any of that on Vincent last week. I'm going to put that on Jameis.
Well, and one of the things schematically.
FSU reference number five.
Schematically, our route combinations work well against zones. They're zone beating combinations, right? One of the things I love about what Jameis seems to do, and I'll never know whether this is true or not unless I'm forced enough to have beers with him or with Coach Cutter. He seems to be able to adjust well. When the defense shows their hand, if a cornerback comes up into press, right, you can see some checks. You can see audibles get called. This offense has to be willing to, if that defense shows that they're going to play man and they're going to show it early, to let the receivers beat them in a way that Jameis can deliver the ball, right? Get across their face. Get to the middle of the field. If you're going to get to the outside, that's okay, but that's a much harder throw because if I'm in man, I'm in trail.
Right.
And if I'm in trail, I'm in front. Right, these are basic fundamentals, and so that the interception, that random guy that replaced Williams, who should have had a bad game, but he only played three plays or however many Chris counted before he got yanked, and random guy cornerback came in and played like a freaking superstar. That play, that's why this works. You had a guy standing right where the ball was thrown. I don't know why Jameis threw the ball where he did, but that was an accuracy issue.
Right.
Anyway, we've been going for about an hour. I want to thank Chris from BYOCB podcast and at BBP Chris on Twitter. Chris, thanks for joining us. Anything you want to pimp again? I know you're going to be in Winter Haven Friday night.
Be at Grove Roots tomorrow. Shout out to Bell Biv DeVoe, BBD.
Oh, yes. Of New Edition Origins. Nice. I like it.
There you go.
We don't do your play in and play out music because we're not cool enough to do that. Plus, I'd like to not get sued. But I would definitely play some Bell Biv DeVoe for real. But thanks for joining us, Chris. We'll see you again next week, my friend.
Thanks for having me on. Have a good good evening, both of you gentlemen. TV star Mark Cook.
Whatever.
TV star. Nice. All right, man. Take care.
See ya.
Chris Oxendine says, never trust a big butt and a smile. That's all I trust, Chris. I don't think that BBD were being honest there. I think they just had a bad experience. They should have continued taking cuts at that that opportunity. Now, Mark, tell us more about this TV star thing, because our boy, who was it? It wasn't Brooks, was it? Was it Brooks on Twitter? One of our former radio guys.
Brian Drake.
It was Drake. That's right. Tell us more about this TV analyst situation.
I wasn't an analyst. I just had an opportunity to spend some time with Scott Smith, the new sports director at Channel 13, had me
Looks
on Sunday. I was wearing my brand new Bespoken Company custom tailored suit by David Kahn. Thank you very much, David.
No pants, though.
No, absolutely not. I was completely nude behind that desk. But I was wearing my Vans.
Of course you were.
And it was a good opportunity for me. You know, it's a little nerve wracking. Luckily, we taped it ahead of time. So if there were some screw ups, which, you know, there wasn't too many. But we taped about 10 minutes. Of course, they ran about three. Hopefully, we're going to do more stuff with Channel 13 moving forward. Of course, you know, they're the Fox affiliate here locally. So, you know, they cover the Buccaneers as well as anybody in this market. So really appreciate Scott Smith's opportunity to be on with him. You know, I probably should have wore a beekeeper's mask, one of those hoods that guys wore
something
right before
that covers
they got
how
hung
ugly you are.
Yes, one of those hoods that guys wore, not those kind of hoods, the hoods that guys wore before they got hung in the Old West.
You're letting your Plant City show.
Sorry. And but anyway, I survived. Look, there's been uglier people on TV than me. I mean, I can't name that many, but there's a few. And I will say this, HD just is not good. I thought it's wonderful unless you're on TV, then it's not pretty.
Totally understand.
But you know what?
Cheryl says you sound like you're speaking through a loaf of Wonder Bread, but I think that's just his voice.
What do you mean a loaf of what does that even mean?
I don't know, but she uses really interesting references like that, and they're usually pretty good. But we want to check the audio levels. If anyone else is hearing Wonder Bread-like sound from Mark, let us know. And we will make sure we get that cleaned up.
Maybe.
But at any rate, that's really cool you got a chance to do that, and hopefully we'll see more of you on TV. I know that when SportsCenter went to HD, when SportsCenter went to HD, they had to rebuild their whole set. It was terrible, and it was a very interesting an interesting challenge. Anyway,
I like Channel 13. Listen, I grew up watching it. I mean, Andy Hardy was the man when we were kids.
I can't believe you just mentioned Andy Hardy.
Andy Hardy was my hero when I was a kid. That's what I wanted to be, was Andy Hardy.
Understandable.
And he was not a good-looking guy.
No.
He looked kind of like a Muppet. But
so then there is hope for you.
Right. No, I mean, I'm just saying, there's, you know, there's not everyone's. I mean, who's the guy on NFL Network that has the ears that look like satellite dishes? Andrew Siciliano.
Yeah.
Great guy. Spend a lot of time with him at the East-West Shrine Game. And in Mobile, Cheryl. That's the Senior Bowl in Mobile, but he comes down here to St. Pete, too, as well. So, good guy, but, I mean, obviously not a face for TV, so there's hope for us ugly people.
There you go. There you go. All right.
Well, although, my picture, not my pitcher, because if it was a pitcher, it would be like a guy that threw the ball, but my picture got 306 likes. I don't even know 306 people in this world. It was my most popular picture either.
From when you were on TV?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I thought to myself, I think it was the suit. I think suits on a man, no matter how unattractive the man is, I think a suit on a man is equivalent to a bikini on a woman when they do a selfie.
Well, we have a huge female demographic at What the Buck. So all of our female... No, we don't.
No.
Our female demographic, Cheryl and Nikki... I think that's it.
Christy Finette.
If you guys could let us know if that's true about suits. But Rendak says it may have been because he uploaded it to Grindr. So that may have...
It was Tinder, but yes.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever. All right, listen, I want to thank Mark Cook. I want to thank Chris Fisher from BYOCB, formerly of Bucks Brief Podcast. I want to let Mark tell you a little bit. PewterReport.com, always leading the thrust, as it were, on content. You guys always keep it going. We had a great time with you at Keelan Curley.
Hope to see you guys, and we haven't planned out which one it is, but we want the What the Buck crowd, one of our watch parties this year. If it can work out, we can team up and really blow things out at the Hard Rock at some point. We'll figure that out and announce that at some point. Hopefully this season. Hopefully we've got some more social events coming up that you guys can come out with. Love having you guys come out. Great time at Keel and Curley. Don't have anything right this second on the horizon, although the Monday night game will be the next road game, which we'll be doing a watch party at the Seminole Hard Rock Casino. Great drink specials and food specials and things like that. But as far as content goes, our guys, Zach and Eric and Scott, and even occasionally I throw something up, we've been pumping out the content, some good stuff.
True story.
Want to see, you know, we revamped our website a few months ago. We've taken some hits from some people who didn't like some of the things, message boards in particular. We've spent a lot of time and a lot of man hours changing the message boards, trying to get it up to speed where people like it. We had to switch over from a different system, so it can't be exactly the way that it was, but we're trying to make it as close as possible. So, you know, we certainly encourage people to come to the message boards. A great place. It's, you know, everything on Pewter Report is free. I think people, every once in a while, I get people to say, hey, you know, is it still $10 a year for insider? There's none of that anymore. Everything is free. Go to pewterreport.com. Check it out as often as you can during the course of the day. And something that, you know, in the past, maybe we were, you know, we put up one or two things. We did more long, lengthy type stories. We've tried to, you know, still have those in-depth type features, but at the same time having, you know, some more interesting, shorter things for people that are in a hurry and things like that. Site is fully, you know, configured with your mobile device.
It's called responsive.
Same thing. Looks really pretty on a iPad or a Surface or a phone or your beeper. It's beeper compatible. That's not true. 143, baby. So anyway, the point is we hope people come check out the new and improved Pewter Report. Continue to offer up suggestions. But come hang out on the message boards and spend some time with us and interact with other Buccaneer fans. You know, I know that your chat room during the podcast is very popular. You know, we have a live thread going on during the course of a game where people can real-time interact and talk to other Bucs fans. So we hope people will do that. Of course, follow us at Pewter Report on Twitter and Instagram. Also, Pewter Report.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we really appreciate the partnership we have with you. I'd love to see our two worlds collide more in a very positive way.
Absolutely.
There's definitely some separation that happens with these sorts of subcultures as we have danced around in the space for a long time. I'd love to see that crossover. If you want to do some social stuff, get with Cheryl and myself as well. And we'll make sure we coordinate as best we can. Give our folks a little bit more advance notice, and we'll come out in full force.
Yeah.
Because we certainly appreciate it. So.
You want to do another Keel and Curley this year, though? Did you like that setup? Was that all right?
You know, it's funny. I actually did like the setup. It's kind of a pain to set up because it's a lot of gear.
Yeah.
And the weather was not great.
Right.
But it was actually not bad. And I really liked the stage. I think if we could do it, blow it out, we could plan something neat there.
How was the beer? It was great, wasn't it?
I enjoyed the beer.
I meant to bring one of the six-packs. I brought some of that elderberry. I brought a couple of those six-packs home.
I would definitely enjoy some of the elderberry cider.
All right,
it was good.
Next week, if the Buccaneers win, I'm bringing a six-pack of elderberry, and we will kill the six-pack during the course of an hour.
That sounds glorious. Glorious, glorious. All right, I want to thank the guys for joining us. I want to remind you guys we got our tailgate coming up. Get to our website, whatthebuck.net. Click on tailgate. You'll see all the information. We also shared the video. I think we need to improve the thumbnail. I got some feedback during the show that the thumbnail is not great. But if you have not clicked on the video, take a look at the fun video that we put out this week, in fact, this evening, about our tailgate rules. Get out there. Have a great time. Meet some other great Buccaneers fans. Have Pitmaster Pat's amazing food. Hear Franco's new anthem, which we debuted at the kickoff party at Ferg's. It's going to be an amazing time, and if you are not signed up to our mailing list, get to whatthebuck.net, look at the bottom, put your email address in there, and you will get a flyer that Jay Hatch has put together. And if Mark, I don't know if you saw it on your Facebook feed, but the flyer is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you the weather, it gives you the menu, yep. It gives you everything broken down, and Kurt Creel said it best when he shared that thing. Here, look at this, because our tailgate's better than yours,
mm-hmm.
Right? And that's just the way it is. So get out to the best tailgate, come out with the best Buck fans.
It's really the only tailgate. I mean, there's a few imitators out there, but it's not even close. And when you guys come, make sure to bring your items to donate, because ultimately they like to have fun and they like to have drink and party and things like that, but they like to make a difference to the community. So make sure, and if you forget to bring anything, Cheryl, Derek, any of these guys, they'll take cash, they'll go buy what they need to do, make a donation, bring a check, whatever it is. That's what it's all about, okay?
Thank you very much, Mark. That means a lot to us coming from you. And it's absolutely true.
Who never gets off his wallet. So you're right. That does.
It's very, very true. If you did,
never done anything.
It's also empty.
Yes, that's true.
But all kidding aside, though, one of the things we have noticed is we obviously collect the donations. We usually throw off about $1,000 to a named charity, which is great. This week, and I forgot I didn't mention this, Cheryl, I can't believe she didn't kick me in the butt about this.
I will.
We have a limited edition gold shirt for pediatric cancer, because we're going gold for pediatric cancer. And if you buy the shirt at the tailgate, it's $20, and you get a pie. We were trying to do this thing that we haven't been able to do yet, which is the ice bucket challenge for pediatric cancer with pies in the face. And we do it at the tailgate, and it's fun, but we haven't been able to challenge other tailgates across the country, which is what we really want to do. But this week, if you're at the tailgate with whatever we have left over, we'll sell them for $20 a piece, and you get a pie, and you can pick a member of the crew and hit them in the face with the pie. And it's really a great photo opportunity. It's a great time.
What kind of pies are these?
These. So let me, I'll pull the kimono back. Not literally, because that would be upsetting.
Yikes.
Plus, I'm not wearing a kimono.
You're not wearing anything.
I'm wearing Spike's green thong. See, look at that reference. Only like four people get it. It makes me sad. No, we used real pies to begin with, and they were so gross.
And too expensive.
Well, we used Ready Whip crap, right? Yeah. But the Ready Whip was terrible, right? So we use shaving cream now. It looks the same, and it's easier to wash out, and you smell like shaving cream.
And you can shave.
And you can shave if you want to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, get out to the tailgate. It is like warm apple pie, Ryan, you sick bastard.
Ryan Winfrey?
Yeah, Ryan Winfrey.
He's eating a few warm apple pies.
But one of the things we also notice is that sometimes people are a little leery about giving cash. Obviously, we take donations only for the food and the drink, mm-hmm. and the net goes to the charity. But no one ever questions bringing, I'm not going to wear women's multicolored socks.
I know the news is filled with these idiots. I will stake everything I own in my entire life on the reputation of these people. There is no way, no how, no way in hell that a penny of this money, if you bring cash, will go anywhere except to exactly where they say that is. I will stake my reputation, which isn't great, but I will stake it on this. So if you got $20, you give $20. If you guys don't want to take cash because you don't want to deal with that, I understand.
No, we do. We take cash. We take cards.
But don't if there's somebody listening, and if they're listening to this, they know the quality of character of you guys. So
well, that's good stuff. I always try and make sure that we let people know there's multiple ways to help. But anyway, thank you.
Although
guys.
Although maybe I'll show up at the next one and collect.
You could.
I have no more morality at all. I will just steal the
he's
money.
He's amoral. Nice. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. We predicted a victory. We're going to have a great tailgate. We always win the tailgate. We're going to get into that stadium and hopefully have it rocking like back when we were a force to be reckoned with. We'll be back. Keep your eye peeled to the website for more great content from our side as well. I mean, Mark talked about PewReport.com, but we got great authors coming out. Big shout out to those new authors who are putting that content out. Young guys and old guys alike.
Your young kid's doing a pretty good job.
I think he's doing a great job. I think Evan's doing a great job. Thomas is doing great. John, the whole crew.
Yeah.
So they're all coming along. They're coming into their own. And we're going to continue to push that envelope as far as we can. But we will see you guys next week. We'll get this podcast posted. And hopefully we'll be talking about a Bucks win next week. Thanks for joining us. Here is Franco's new outro. I will try and play it real time. But if I jack it up.
I'll sing it.
You are not going to be able to sing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like bugs running, man, I think that's all, folks. My man, Oaks, just shut down another show. Same day, same time for the past 11 years. Guess what? Next week, we gon' be right here. Talking about the Bucks and having a good time. We give it to you straight, don't need to be between the lines. The beat drop hard every time I hit the nine. And if you didn't know it, this is Franco on the rhymes. Yeah. 11 years strong, y'all. It's the What the Buck podcast. My man, Derek, they call him old school. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the buck. It's what the buck. Yeah. It's what the buck. Yeah. It's what the buck. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the buck.